Hi, this is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm interviewing James A. Owen, the author of Here There Be Dragons, among many other books. James, how are you?
I'm very good, David. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's really good to talk to you today. I do want to say that this is it's a slightly unusual interview for me because usually I try to read the most current book by an author. And in this case, of course, this is not your most current book, but the first in a series called The Chronicles of the Imaginarium Geographica. I want to say that I love this book. I think it's a tremendous and exciting, you know, a great story with lots of twists and filigrees, as they were. But, you know, I know this is aimed at officially at a young adult audience, but no question that it's readable by any adult who likes a good story. But can you tell me what the origin of this series is? When did you start working on this?
Well, I originally came from comic books. I'd done a comic book series throughout the 90s called Starchild. And so I was accustomed to writing and illustrating stories, and I'd never done a prose novel before until a fan of my comic books in Germany came to me with a proposal to write a book for a series he was conceiving and editing, and it was going to be called Myth World. And I ended up writing all the books in the series, and it became my series. But that gave me a lot of experience writing these books. And in one of the Myth World...
And those were fiction or those were comics?
They were straight prose novels.
Got it.
He had become quite a prominent novelist himself, and his earlier publishers couldn't afford him anymore. So they were going to do this series of books, sort of like the Tom Clancy NetForce books here, where you have the cachet of Tom Clancy's name in the title, but other authors were actually writing these based on some of his ideas.
Oh, I got it. So, and were you credited on those?
Oh, it was more than credited. They were going to have seven authors write these originally, and he had three pages of notes and maybe two paragraphs about what my book would be. And mine was going to be second or third in the series. And I took that and ran with it and turned it in, and I said, since I'm second or third, I made up situations and characters and referred to events in a book one that doesn't exist yet. So you can change what you like. And he said, well, no one else has actually written a single word in the other books. And so I took a cue from that and got a case of Diet Coke and locked myself in my room for a weekend and came out with 20 pages of outlines for six other books, including a book one that meshed completely with my already written book two. And they hired me for all of them, and at that point it became my series. So it's only called Kai Meyer's Mythenwelt, our Myth World in Germany, but I own the title and the copyrights because it became my series. And in one of those books, I referred to a library that had a book of maps to imaginary lands that had once been owned by H.G. Wells. And this idea had stuck in my head as something I wanted to develop. And so a few years later, I was pitching some movie projects in Hollywood and had endless meetings with executives and producers and sat down with a fellow that was a vice president of a movie studio, or production company, rather, and he went through everything I had. Didn't want the Myth World books, didn't want the Starchild comics, but there was this unfinished 10-page outline called Here Be Dragons, and he said, that's the thing that my boss is going to like. And we started developing it as a screenplay, and after a year or so of that, we thought, well, you know, my experience, my background is in publishing. What if we got a book deal to maybe make it more enticing to the movie studios? And my managers had a lot of experience and lots of relationships in publishing, and we put together a 15-page outline and shopped it around, and we ended up selling it to Simon & Schuster. And you noted that this is primarily aimed and marketed to a young adult readership, and that's almost entirely accidental.
Was it
Because
there? Was that done by the publisher, or is that your?
here's the thing. My management group, my management team, the Gotham Group, mostly represents animation and young adult and children's projects and publishers. And I hadn't conceived of this as being for younger readers. We got the offer from Simon and Schuster, and my manager said, "Well, it's really good. It's a really good deal." And I said, "Great. How fast can we sign it?" And she says, "Well, wait. It's from the children's division. The senior VP of the children's division is the one that wants it, and he would be your editor." And I said, "Even better." And she says, "Wait. This is a good enough deal that if you say yes, you are forever going to be painted as a children's book author. And you have to decide right now if you're okay with that." And I turned around and looked at this row of Harry Potter books on my shelf and said, "Yeah, I think I'm good with that."
Right. Well, and of course, it is very true. And I think lots of people have come to understand this, maybe because of Harry Potter, but certainly other books like Francesca Lea Block. Writing for young adults does not limit you in any way to who reads your book. It may limit you on some imaginary level with certain bookstores or, categizations that might affect some people, but there are a lot of people who just love a good book.
Well, we actually discovered there was a blessing in disguise in this particular decision that has made all the difference. Because if you would have had these books published by a traditional imprint for adults, let's say, for example, Del Rey. Del Rey is a widely known, well-respected science fiction fantasy imprint. If they'd published this for adults, you can't really market it down to younger readers. But because this was published by Simon and Schuster for young readers, we can market it up to adults.
Exactly right.
But all of the schools, all of the libraries, all of the children's bookstores are the ones that are the core of my support and my readership. And if this had been published as a book for adults, I wouldn't be speaking at middle schools all over the country.
Well, and it's a tremendous, of course, it may be accidental, but it does mean that all those kids, when they grow up, they're not going to forget you.
Yeah.
You'll have fans for the rest of their lives, for a long, long time to come.
And that's not a terrible thing. That's another good cue to kind of take from Joe Rowling, is that kids grew up reading the Harry Potter books. A lot of them grew up at the same pace that Harry was growing up
That's right.
and really identified with it. I may also have the distinction of having one of the only fantasy series for kids where most of the protagonists are middle-aged men.
Well, that's
But
true.
he
I was going to ask you about that. It's unusual. Of course, the typecast version of a young adult novel or a novel for kids is that the character is the age of the imaginary reader. And
Yeah.
you didn't do that here. I was going to ask you about the next three books in the series, and I believe the newest one is coming out in October 2009. But are the characters also adult in all of the books?
No, there's a scattering of children, and we have younger characters coming in. And one of the main characters, as we start in the first book, and Here There Be Dragons, our three main protagonists are John, Jack, and Charles. And for those of you listeners that don't know any more about the books, that's all I'm going to say about them,
Right, it's
because there's a bit
important.
of a surprise.
Right, and it's important to keep that surprise.
As much as possible, yeah. At the end of the book, there's a good surprise about these three young men. But Jack is actually our young adult character. He's 17 when the book starts. John is in his early 20s, and Charles is actually 30. And so, with the exception of Jack, the other main characters are already adult. John's married. There are other younger characters in that first book, but then we hit the second book, and we've skipped ahead a few years. but again, I do have some other younger characters there. And that's the thing, though, I think that makes the story I'm trying to tell more universal, is that by the time we've hit book four, the one that's coming in October, The Shadow Dragons, my three principal characters are considerably older than when we started. But I still have this wonderful experience of 10 and 12-year-olds coming to me and telling me they identify with Charles or they identify with Jack.
Well, they're kind of your heroes are classically heroes, and they have, I think they're easily identified with. They're living exciting lives. It's complicated. It's not easy for them, but they do overcome. And
Kids identify with that in these stories, and that's, there may be some sort of a lesson in that as well, that these kids have no problem identifying with these obviously older characters in these stories. I have something that a lot of my friends would refer to as a case of arrested development, but I have never really gone past my teenage years in the things that I loved then, my office, the large room that I do most of my work in, is basically a testament to all of these things that I have always loved and never abandoned, never walked away from. There's some great quote. Someone once said something about success is realizing as an adult the dreams that you had as a child, and I've never transitioned away from that. I started publishing very, very young. I've actually got quite a bit of tenure in the comics industry for, the age that I am now. I was the youngest publisher to ever exhibit at the San Diego Comic-Con, and I didn't have a driver's license at the time. My partner and I had to get my aunt to drive us to the Comic-Con. And I had gotten a booth. We got a bank loan to get the booth and the hotel room and pay for the U-Haul truck. And the thing is there's still posters on my wall today that I had from back then.
Oh,
It's
and
been.
I see the pictures on you on your website of your two spaces, the writing space and the drawing space. This is at the coppervale.livejournal.com, which I think you have. They're great because they do show a lot of your personality. But you have a lot of courage too to show people, what it is that you live or, that's the sort of your personal space. I think that's pretty
I
good.
think the personal space is also important to people having an understanding of why I do the kind of work that I do and why I love the things that I do. I've always loved comics, always loved fantasy. The fact that the books are illustrated, this is something a lot of people don't realize. I not only did the covers for all of the books, but they're fully illustrated. Every chapter has a full-page illustration in the style of the old books, like Alice in Wonderland and Peter Pan and Kensington Gardens.
No, I definitely noticed that. And of course, I knew a little bit about you before I started reading this book. It's very unusual for someone to have who can do both. There often are wonderful illustrators out there who can't tell a story, and there or write, and there are many great writers, and probably most of them can barely draw. But it's unusual to have someone who can do both and merge the two skill sets into one thing that actually works.
I've gotten into such a habit, especially with my storytelling technique from comics. I still, to this day, my first outline or the first draft of a novel is one page on a yellow legal pad. And I break it down by chapters. I title all the chapters. Then I do thumbnail illustrations for the drawings. And so when I've done those few pieces of paper, I have little notes written off in the margins across from each chapter title. And then I have the one key visual element for each chapter. And that gives me sort of a roadmap for what I'm going to do with the actual book. And I did that with the comics, and I do it now with the novels.
And do you stick here? I mean, that's of course the interesting question. Do when you conceive the chapter outline and the illustrations that go with them, does that stay, or do you find that as you build the book and you actually write it out, that there are times when you change direction, or do you really stay with the outline?
There are usually going to be some changes. They're not often significant. When I'm working it through, sometimes I'll rearrange the order of a few of the chapters. I very rarely have I had to discard any of the illustrations outright or any of the real plot lines outright. There are some things that get switched around, but I've kind of gotten into this groove. I mean, I did comic books for quite a long time. And then at this point, I'm working on the fifth and sixth novels in the Chronicles of the Imaginarium Geographica. So I've got this particular system down, and I'm pretty comfortable with how it's going. And I had most of the entire series outlined before we sold the first book.
Well, it seems like it kind of implies, I think, to anybody that you're a natural storyteller, that you're able to visualize the story before you actually write it, or you can tell the story, you know, in outline form. And that indicates to me that you have a kind of innate understanding of story. It may not be true, but I think it is.
Well, I hope so.
Because the story, you know, I haven't read enough of your novels to be able to talk about it, you know, kind of as a critical reader. But definitely this story has this book has a great story that just pulls you right in. And it feels fluid and smooth, and that's, to me, one of the marks of a good story. You know, if you can feel the levers and see the wheels turning as a reader, then, you know, maybe the storyteller has had some trouble. But in your case, I didn't feel that there was any, nothing showed. It was all very smooth. So you don't see the inner workings of the story being done, you know, kind of to you. You become part of the story, which is, I think, it's a good sign. I wanted to ask you about the movie, because you mentioned early on this series kind of grew out of a movie treatment, and there's mention of a movie deal somewhere along the line. What's happened? What's the latest on a potential movie for Here There Be
Dragons? Actually, the initial deal that we did got us a lot of publicity as the first book launched, and that was mostly because the vice president of the company I'd been dealing with worked for a guy named David Heyman, whom people would know because he's the producer of the Harry Potter films. And it was significant because he bought the option on Harry Potter before it became Harry Potter. So he was very instrumental in that whole rise to prominence. Warner Brothers, because that's who David had his deal with, was going to be producing it. And then basically we had other producers involved, and nothing really happened while I got these other books written, and a couple more were published, and the writer's strike happened in the middle of that, and I'd already written the screenplay based on my own novel. And the truth is, David has got at least two more Harry Potter films to finish, and that was taking up all of his time and attention. And so as of December, we actually got the rights back from Warner. And now we're in the middle of discussions with half a dozen other producing groups and a couple of the studios, because when this started, there was a good hook to the story. There was a good surprise at the end, which, of course, all the press releases gave away. but there was an interesting story, and we had other people interested, but their first argument was, it's new, it's untested, we'd be taking a big risk because we don't know if the book is going to come out and flop. And the situation now, 3 years later, is we know that it hasn't, because the first book is in its sixth hardcover printing. They've sold the rights in a couple of dozen countries. I just got copies of the third one in Polish today. We've sold them to most of the Eastern European countries and Japan and Russia. And, as I said, I'm working on the fifth and sixth books in the series right now. So the whole series has legs. The first book definitely does. And it's turning into a global hit with a global readership. And that's very attractive to a movie studio.
Oh, and I think quite naturally, as a reader, you can feel that the book could translate into a movie quite well. Very, you know, cinematic. There's so many things you can
do. Well, it helps that because of how we outlined the first book, that it had a very natural three-act structure to it. I veer away from that a little bit with the subsequent books because the series took the direction it wanted to take, and it got larger and a little more expansive as we went on.
But you have, you know, you also give visual clues about, you know, for anybody wanting to make a movie, what it could look like, and if you imagine, you know, movies with dragons are pretty attractive. I mean, you've got knights and, you know, all kinds of wonderful characters, you know, that you could...
If you think about it, at this particular point in time, having a discussion with a movie studio, we essentially have 100 pieces of pre-production art showing every aspect of the characters and the scenarios and the storylines and the landscapes and settings, just taking the art from the books in. They've got all of this visual material to draw on.
Oh, yeah, it would just be wonderful. Well, I hope it happens. There's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, because I noticed that you know, in your history as a publisher as well as an author, you now are publishing a couple of magazines. And I noticed Argosy, which, you know, is an old name going back to the 40s and 50s.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little.
I was asking you about Argosy magazine.
Uh-huh.
What prompted you to take that on? I'm just kind of curious about your interest there.
You know, there were a couple of magazine projects that I wanted to do. International Studio was an old arts magazine. It was actually the original parent magazine to Connoisseur. And so it was the arts magazine at the turn of the last century. And it fell apart during World War II when they lost their European audience. And so this trademark and this wonderful brand had languished for all these years. And I basically trademarked it and decided, let's put out an arts magazine that's about the art. And I wanted to cover all the visual arts and do something just really gorgeous and attractive, and not an art magazine where you've got a big article and then a postage stamp-sized piece of art. I wanted full-page spreads. And because I had started this whole idea, and we actually released several issues of the magazine, that expanded to, well, what else can we do that would be interesting? And I'd love to design books. I love to design magazines. We thought Argosy is a grand old name in fiction. It's where Tarzan was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And the trademark's available. And what if we redid Argosy under the spirit of a genreless magazine, just good fiction and good design? And we designed it as a two-volume magazine inside of a paperboard slipcase. And between that and International Studio, we had a couple of very attractive, award-winning magazines that subsequently lost lots of money, gave me lots of experience in how things can go wrong in the magazine distribution business, which was essentially what happened, is our distributor had lots of problems with Argosy in particular, in large part because of the format. And two issues of that crashing in terms of the distribution just not being there meant that the advertisers were not going to be there. The ones we had were not going to be paying. We were getting no sales returns on this, as in no cash flow coming back. And it was just turning into a big disaster. And it put me into a lot of debt and a lot of grief. And I had an editor call me up and say, James, you know, a lot of other magazine publishers have had similar problems lately, and they've been going under, and you've got a lot of debt accumulated. This is going to be a serious issue for you. What are you going to do about it? Because they're never going to fix the problems they caused. And I said, I've thought over my options, and really the only thing that I can do is I need to write and sell a best-selling novel and then get a movie deal for a gazillion dollars. And then maybe I can recover everything. And he said, well, God be with you, James. And that was the whole idea, was I needed to become a successful novelist so that I could take care of my obligations from having done the magazines. And it was a great experience. Like I said, all of our printers won a bunch of awards for it. The design came across beautifully. But I really prefer writing and illustrating. And at best, I don't know that I would want to be a publisher again.
Well, as a
comics publisher, it worked out pretty well because it was a different type of industry. Mainstream newsstand distribution, you know, people joke about it being basically like working with the mob. And the thing is when somebody else controls all the purse strings, it's hard for you to get any momentum. And when a lot of your goals are to create beautiful books, and that was it. We paid the authors we had really well. We used nice art for the covers and the interiors. We produced some beautiful stuff. The second one we did had full-color art by Dr. Seuss.
Oh, wow.
First one was two-tone, and it was illustrated with photographs of blues musicians. I mean, it had a lot of great things going for it. The two-volume format was very unique, and a lot of people loved it. But if you're going to do that as an ongoing commercial enterprise, it takes a lot of different skill sets, and it took more manpower and resources than I had. And
if what it did was result in your writing this wonderful series, Here There Be Dragons, it was a fortunate bad experience. James, I want to thank you for spending so much time with me.
Oh, well, thank you.
This is David Wilk for Writer's Cast. I've been with interviewing James A. Owen, the author of Here There Be Dragons, and a number of other titles in the series of the Chronicles of the Imaginarium Geographica. Thank you so much, James.
Thank you, David.
Bye-bye.